Welcome in and welcome to another episode of The Legacy Right. That is Lysander Spooner in the background, and we have returned for yet another one. It is me, the legacy of Jennifer Ant Kaiser. I am Zachary Kaiser, and I am your host, your El Capitan, your captain. Engage, make it so. Andrew Joseph is my number one, two. My number two,
Doc
mostly
Savage.
because yeah, you're savage, but I was making a number two joke,
Yeah.
so and a Star Trek reference as well. So, but we have yet another special guest. All of our guests are always special. We have yet another special guest to bring on. Once again, some of you have probably heard of her. Others may not have. So, because she likes to keep her privacy, right? So, like, you know, I mean, we all want to be left alone. So, but at the same time, we all want to cooperate. So, before we get into business and introduce her, though, Andrew, we got to do the plug. We got to do the ad. So, fanghornforesters.com, for all your woodworking needs and necessities. Anything from wood cutting boards, to wood coasters, anything of wood to like custom made, it doesn't matter. Go to fanghornforesters.com. And if you're in the greater Cincinnati area, millwork, mobile millwork, he'll come to you. So fanghornforesters.com, FANGORN. I know everybody wants to forget that there's not an H in Fanghorn, but fanghornforesters.com. So let's get back to the show. How are you doing today, Andrew?
I'm doing pretty good. How you doing, Zach?
I'm doing all right. So, would you like to do the honors? This was your guest working, to bring her on. So, if you'd like to do the honors, I talk too much and host. I'd like to allow you to be the host for once, Andrew.
Okay, this is Rachel Sunshine. You can find her on Facebook. We're here today to talk about a variety of topics, but the first, thing I'd like to ask you, Rachel, is it's attributed to Barry Goldwater that they say that, oh man, what's the quote, Zach? I was talking about this earlier, and I'm sorry, I'm drawing a blank.
I should have looked up the quote, but
Yeah,
I got the
freedom.
notes here though.
I'm
So,
sorry about that.
freedom is a defense of liberty, is no vice, right?
Yeah.
So something
How do
in and
you?
around somewhere
Yeah.
along the lines.
Extremism in the defense of liberty is no vice. That's the quote. How do you what's your perspective on that in today's climate? Do you think it's worth the effort to dig in the claws, and or would it be better for anybody who wants to practice their liberty to go to a place where you don't have to struggle so much and to practice that liberty, diversify what you're going to do, where you're at, based on the flow of the conversation.
Okay. Thanks so much for having me on. I really appreciate it. I think I'm going to have a lot of fun here. Wow. That is a very loaded question. Thanks for asking that. I really think that all change starts with the self. So I'm actually working on my second book here that is going to explain how people can do this by themselves and then eventually work to have a community close to them that does this with them, and then eventually affects the ballot box, and then eventually affects the TV and media, which can change people's perspectives and minds. So I have to say that it is always worth it, no matter the punishment, for speaking the truth and being on the side of liberty. I have been ostracized I don't even for like my entire life. Andrew was asking me how long I've been an activist, and I told him since the age of 7, which is highly accurate. So I was a nerd. I read a biography on the sitting Supreme Court justices in like 1994. And my mom was telling me at that time, you can be anything that you want. And the first thing that popped out of my mouth was that I wanted to be Amish. And she told me that it didn't work like that. So I'm here to tell you today that it totally does. You can actually live off grid. You don't have to be part of the Amish community, but you can strive to get off of this grid. It is totally plausible and possible. The second thing that I chose was to be a Supreme Court justice to give, and I'm going to quote myself, to give people as much freedom as possible. As I grew older, I realized that that was nonsensical and that you can't actually give people more freedom. And yeah, especially cannot do it through the Supreme Court of the United States of America. So that changed my perspective quite a bit. But I definitely believe that you can do incremental changes in your local community. I actually ran for office in 2022 as my local county commissioner against a Republican, as an unaffiliated candidate who was an open anarchist, who promised to void out my own position within the 4 years of me being in office. So that garnered about 3,000 votes in a small community that only had about 7,000 people voting regularly. So we're there. There's like, statistically, I've done the research. I just went out into the community and was like, where the hell are we with freedom? Right? Where are we with liberty in America? Because like online, I've got, my community that's totally for freedom. But when I go out into the world, it seems completely shut down. So I had to just figure this out for myself. And I'm a nerd. So I did a statistical analysis and just threw myself to the wolves. I think, 40 to 50%, and this is based off of campaigning under their rules and their game, right? So I had to follow all of that structure, which there's a lot to be said of that on like its own separate issue on corruption and what they're allowed to do to candidates to make sure that they don't get on the ballot and to make sure that they aren't elected. So if we have 40 to 50% of people who really are on the side of liberty, who understand that the government is working unlawfully, illegally outside of their own rule of law, we actually have a chance. And if we show people that there is a real path, not something made out of pure selfishness or greed, but it's in consideration of the community, we may actually get somewhere with people who are not anarchists in any way and never considered them to consider the idea of voluntary interactions, non-aggression, and agorism.
And that brings me to a question on the campaign aspect. So why is it, considering you have the experience in dealing with all of the campaign rules, the regulations, all that with elections commissions, why is it that they want to close in the close the book so sharply on those that won't play their narrative game?
Yeah, so I have to say that the Democrats and the Republicans here actually worked together to keep me out of office. Like literally the Democrats voted for a Republican to keep me out of office. So at the state level, so Article 2 of the Constitution grants states pretty wide breadth in their regulation of elections. And Article 2 basically allows them to create their own rules. Most of the states have actually created the rules, and they explicitly give the big two parties control over the election process. Like it's kind of crazy. It's not, oh, the state's going to do this. It's the Democrat Party is going to do this. The Republican Party is going to do this. And really, best of luck in trying to be an unaffiliated candidate. So they want everybody out who is against them because they can't raid the coffers. They can't steal from the Treasury anymore. They will have rules enacted against them that would prevent them from becoming like millionaires while they're in office. It will only be for their duty. It's you have like fiduciary duties as a public officer. So when you're like part of a nonprofit organization, you have fiduciary duties. Like you're not supposed to do something that benefits you personally. There is an additional fiduciary duty that a public servant has, and that is the duty of trust. So when a government official actually violates their duty of trust and it makes a person not believe in the system of justice or the system of law or the system of government, they're violating their fiduciary duties. So there are ways that we can close that gap where they're able to take lobbying money, for example, to turn around and expand the SNAP program, which then increases food prices by 15% across the board. And we have like ridiculous food costs at this point. I mean, this is all, it's all planned. So they don't want people like us who know about that, who are willing to change that and stop that, and also bring it to the public's attention. Well, they do not like it when you talk about the things that they are doing.
It's amazing that you bring up the SNAP situation and how they use that to build food. Because when we're dealing with rapid inflation every year, obviously that increases the pricing because of the debasement of the dollar. But it's amazing that you brought up that, because that is one single thing, like the subsidy within the food realm, the grocery realm of welfareism, is what raises the prices to keep everybody, I mean, subservient to the state, right? So, I mean, why is that? I mean, why control the food supply, I guess?
Well, if you think about it, right? Kroger is an international grocery chain. So they have like City Market, King Supers, Kroger's, you know, they have like 2,200 stores and convenience stores across the country. They can be completely funded just by government and still survive. They get $8 billion in SNAP program funds every year. Walmart gets $25 billion. These companies can literally survive just off of the SNAP that they get. So they can raise their prices and do whatever they want. There are no state laws that do not allow them to price gouge. So the only laws at the state level that prevent price gouging is if there is an actual declared emergency, and if there are only certain goods like gas and water. So the rest of it is up for grabs. The federal government does not have any type of law for price gouging. So like Kroger's CEO actually said here in February, he was like, I will lower prices for families when our merger goes through. They have a $25 billion merger with Albertsons that is supposed to happen. And he's literally like just publicly extorting us. There's nothing we can do, right? And the government is working with these people because when they make these record-breaking profits during a pandemic that the government shut everything down, they get to give themselves raises. And then they get to donate a hefty amount of money to their political action committees, who then get to donate to the candidates of their choice, who then go to Congress and expand SNAP programs. And it just, it's a rather vicious cycle. If you look at who are the top donors for our presidential campaign here in 2024, you will see that this is blatant. We literally have like Linda McMahon for WWE funding this, along with Michael Bloomberg media. So we've got fake media entertainment completely funding our 2024 presidential campaign. And this is supposed to be America. And honestly, it's like a joke of America. It's like the satirical version of America and what it was supposed to be. And I don't know, man, I'm kind of embarrassed at this point that Americans are just sitting here not doing anything. So vast majority.
It's funny that you say that, Linda McMahon. So, I mean, me and Andrew, we like to use this comparison and contrast. It really is. Our government, our country, everything that's going on, it really is kayfabe. I mean, there's no doubt about it. And then there you go, like Linda McMahon, WWE, like one of the top donors. I mean, there you go. It's all the work.
Yeah. It's literally political theater. You know, we use the term political theater, but it is truly political theater. They've got a script, and that is the bottom line. And we've got people playing it, and it's controlled opposition, and they're distracting you. They're making sure that they distract you so that they can steal from us. I mean, that's really what the bottom line is. It's all about theft. It's all about money. Like Lysander Spooner, he got this down. I've actually been compared to Lysander Spooner the most, as a political theorist, because I agree with him completely, but I succinctly explain, how the Constitution is illusory and void. So I go an extra step than his just theory, and I explain it by law. I'm like, this is it. This is the time that it happened, and that's what my book is about. So, it's basically like I have been a hardcore anarchist for a very long time. We're talking like a decade now. I believe in anarchist solutions. My great great uncle was Alexander Berkman, Emma Goldman's boy toy. Okay, in the early 1900s. So anarchy in my family is a real thing. We kind of think of it as a big deal. And in 2020, when the government shut everything down, I was like, all right, Boogaloo boys, like, here's your chance. Let's get it done. And they all kind of just got scared and said, no way. So here I was, you know, we're in the middle of a lockdown and I don't know how to prevent this. So I had my years of constitutional law analysis in my head, and I basically wrote my book in a day, because it was like word vomit. I had to get it out to the people so that they knew, like, this is how it's happening, you guys. Like, we need to get this done. Like, the power is with us. It's not with government. Government is a third party contractual entity. If the contract doesn't exist, they don't exist. There's nothing there. So the Constitution falls under contract law. And like the Constitution is like the supreme contract law, and then contract law falls underneath that. When you have a party that is not obligated to a contract, and another party is, and they're the only one, that on its face in contract law makes it illusory, and that contract is void. So the Constitution is void just for having what the Supreme Court has deemed legal holes and gaps in it. And then the Supreme Court ruled that they get to figure out and like what those legal holes and gaps are, for themselves and for the rest of the country, in a case in 1803 called Marbury v. Madison. So the Supreme Court said to themselves, we don't have the power of judicial review to decide these holes and gaps, so we're going to give it to ourselves in this court ruling. Okay. And then they went on to do like compounding illegality, I guess would be the way to term this. They use a doctrine that they created for themselves called stare decisis, where they say that once a court ruling has happened, a lawyer and the judge ruling over a case cannot go against that case precedent. Otherwise, it'll make Americans lose faith in the justice system, because they might realize that in 1803, the courts gave themselves the power of judicial review, and underneath that, judicial activism, right? And everything that they've ever ruled on is actually void. And they know this. So they created a legal doctrine where it's like, shh, it's a secret. And if you want to be a lawyer, or you want to be a judge, you want to make a difference, you have to follow stare decisis. So this is why I didn't become a lawyer, right? Because I have to sleep at night. And so,
The
like, I
conscience.
remember, yeah, I remember raising my hand in my constitutional law class, like, hey, did they just grant themselves a power? And my professor was like, wow, you are smart. You need to go to law school like right now. And I was like, yeah, I don't actually think that's gonna happen. So I've spent, you know, I've spent 22 years getting this information out to the public. I mean, I remember talking about this when I was like sick on my deathbed in a hospital, like, it's Marbury v. Madison, you guys. just overrule that. Like, it's terrible. This has been my life's work. So
Funny that you say that, because I have I'm from a family of lawyers. So my brother's a lawyer. My father is just retired from being a lawyer. My mom's father, my grandpa, was an attorney. He actually worked did some works with worked with the mafia too in Cincinnati. So
oh,
'cause we were
okay.
a big
All right.
big mafia town in northern Kentucky, in Newport, Kentucky. They used to call it Little Vegas or whatever. So, and
I've had lawyers like try and jump over a dinner table to like physically attack me when I discuss this. They definitely don't like people knowing that their entire profession is a fraud. So, no offense to your
and
family. It's true.
my dad, I think my dad would probably agree. So would my uncle, his brother. He would probably agree. I mean, there's some fraud to it, and a lot of people get into it for the wrong reasons. Or maybe they're in it for the right reasons, and my dad was got in it for the wrong reasons, which is relatively honest, because he was relatively honest. I mean, for a long time he worked bankruptcy and criminal was his two gravy trains, really. Well, it really wasn't gravy train, because
That's a
I mean,
grift.
we live relatively modest. I mean, he would make deals with his clients. Half the time we'd get like remodels done from clients, because that's how they would repay their bill. So we
An
got a whole
agorist
basement
lawyer,
done.
that's pretty interesting.
I think part of it was my mom a little bit saying we need to get some work done too, and I can't do it all, but which
That's awesome. Yeah, no, lawyers
she
don't
was the man of the
generally
house.
argue. Yeah, that makes sense. I do a lot of work around here. No, lawyers don't generally argue about this. They just get very, very angry. It's not something that you can really dispute. It's part of case law. So it's like historical case law. I'm just going to point to like 1803 and then 1871 and then 1905. And then let's like go on to 2010. You know, I can show like the whole history of how this happened through case law and legal analysis. So it's not really something people argue with. They usually just get really mad or they laugh about it. They're like, well, good luck overturning 300 years of case law. I don't have to. It voids itself out because it's outside of the Constitution. And even Alexander
Exactly.
Hamilton, just the most mutinous founding father, even he agrees that when something is unconstitutional, it is in like on its face void. So that's what, you know, we have to work with the tools that we have, right? You know, as much as I wish that we lived in anarchy, as much as I wish that we lived in voluntarism, that's not a thing. It doesn't exist. That's kind of like a delusion. We can get there. We can definitely get there from constitutionalism and move to anarchy. So that's what I've been working on. That's my working together agreement with other voluntarists that I'm working on. But yeah, you know, when we work within the Constitution to destroy itself, this is something that we were taught like on our debate team in high school. You don't create your own argument out of nowhere that doesn't match your opponent's. You use your opponent's words to completely demolish your opponent. I mean, I've made people cry just by using their own arguments against them. So you've got to use the Constitution against itself. The Constitution has holes and gaps. You explain that to people, and a vast majority of people, unless they're like the clear statist who really, really wants the New World Order to take over, and they believe that humanity will die if that doesn't happen, which I believe is around 30% of the population, right? If they're not one of those, then chances are they're going to agree with you. You know, and it's not something where you're like condescending down to them. It's something where you're like, hey, I need your help. Like, I need your help in order to accomplish the goal I'm trying to have here, which is for me, would either be like a complete rewrite of the Constitution, which I don't recommend from a personal standpoint. And the reason why is because when you rewrite constitutions with politicians who already are working the game of corruption, They're going to do things like they do in Honduras, for example, where they say that you can't remove a representative unless the representative gives you permission. Okay. Things like that. So there will be even more legal holes and gaps with a rewrite, because the people who have been running it for the last, like, you know, 200 and some odd years, 223, we'll call it, they're already corrupt and they already know how to play the game of contract law. So you have to not deal with them, which is why I recommend voiding out the Constitution. So according to contract law, if you and the other signing party decide that you no longer want to be parties of the contract, you can actually just come together and write a clause underneath that contract that voids out the contract. So it's just a negation clause. I negate this contract. It's no longer in effect. That's it. That's all we need our representatives for. So my suggestion would be to follow your own integrity. If you guys have any suggestions on the do's and don'ts of what a person would look like who would be voluntarily leaving this system, this social system, and working to form their own community within a community, somewhat like the people who are trying to build New Illinois. Okay, so at the beginning of the year, there were a bunch of activists who decided that they no longer wanted to have Chicago be part of Illinois, and they have actually been working to annex themselves from Chicago, and they want to call the new state New Illinois. Okay, and this is something that I, you know, I've been listening about people try and do something like this my whole life. I was born in Chicago. So I've been listening to people do this, you know, try and do this their whole life, and they're actually starting to accomplish it right now. It's actually becoming a reality. So it's building a community within a community. So when you have five people who believe in the same end product come together, they're stronger than having 100 people who disagree on what that end product should be. And once you get to about 50 people, it gets to be completely unorganized chaos in which, you know, there's people fighting for leadership and people who want to place illegitimate authority over you, people who are campaigning. So that means that they're probably telling lies and like, hold on, one second. They're probably telling lies and like swift boating people because of their ideas, right? So that's where the political theory of the marketplace of ideas comes into play, where everybody's sitting around in a circle and we're all listening to everybody's idea equally. There is no campaigning. There's no illegitimate authority. It's truly people coming together to work towards a solution that's best for as many people as possible. It's highly unlikely that you will have everybody agree with everything, because human beings have something inherent in them called the in-group, out-group paradigm. So psychologically, there will always be a small minority group who disagrees with what the community and society is doing. And that's just how humans are built.
That's definitely, that sounds like the Enneagram confirmation bias. So,
yeah, no, when I realized that the Supreme Court was working unconstitutionally, I cried for 2 years. You know, realizing that your entire life, everything that you've ever worked towards, working with the media, working as like a communications major, going into law, you know, you're putting money and energy and effort behind this. And then all of a sudden it just kind of falls apart. So I don't want that to happen to other people who've put 10, 15 years into the activism that we've been working on, 2 years, 2 months. You know, I don't want people to lose faith in what we're trying to do here. I do think that it is totally possible. We just need to refocus and remember what our goals are. So those goals are working toward being completely self-sufficient as much as you possibly can. For everything that you can't do yourself, you practice some type of agorism. Okay, so agorism, do you guys know what agorism is?
Yes,
when it comes to black and gray markets?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. You know, so trading, making sure that you are in voluntary agreements with other people. You're not being coerced into, you know, like paying for a contractor because you have to according to the law and things like that. So that would be the second step. And then the third step would actually be creating a sandbox where everybody gets along in the sandbox. That's your community. Your community can be amplified by going to the soap box, right? So by actually speaking out together without the intent of making money or grifting people, right? Yeah. So it's not for your own personal interests. You have to make people believe this. Once people stop believing that that is, you know, you're doing this altruistically, they're done. You know, why in the world would I be supporting another group that wants to have another inherent government when I've got another illegitimate government I'm already dealing with now? I've got to make dinner. I'm out of here, right? So you've got to be legitimate. You've got to have some integrity here. Once you go from the soapbox, you go to the ballot box. And this is where, you know, not everybody is going to be able to do this, but people will be able to support others who are willing to do running for office. We've got to actually participate. We can't keep ignoring our situation. That's never good. No psychologist will tell you to ignore your problem. Our biggest problem is politicians who are like actually working for their own personal fulfillment, working outside of government. So we just replace them with politicians who don't work at all for government and actually work to void out their own position. And once we have people like that, we might be able to have a constitutional convention of people who want to void out government. And then we've got that three-quarter majority of people in office who actually negate the Constitution and bring us into anarchy. So that's basically the gist of it. That's what I'm trying to accomplish here. So it's not, is it worth it? It is necessary. It's not even like there's no value here. It is 100% necessary. Otherwise, what is the alternative? The alternative is death. So if, you know, if like me, I mean, I'm you know, that's the worst case scenario. We've got them trying to control our food, control our water, control our seeds, control our soil. You know, they're doing everything to make sure that they can just wipe us out like we're insects. And, you know, I don't know when we're going to stand. Well, what I can say is that I believe it is possible through nonviolence. Like, I actually believe that we could just use their system against them and just be smarter than them. And that's all that it takes. And it's the mildest amount of education as well. But what it does take is the
focus,
building of your own resourcefulness. So you've got to be resourceful. You're the one that has to give people that inspiration to move further in this process. We can't be playing childish games and expect us to actually get anywhere and win the hearts and minds of people. I do believe that at least half the country is searching for that freedom that we used to talk about and used to have. So it's a matter of actually reaching them, and not doing it through anger or malice, or aggression. It's really got to be done as human to human, really humbling interaction. I'm coming to you to ask for your help. I'm not telling you we have to do this. I'm just telling you that we can get it done. It can happen. Like, we just need to, we need each other.
What are your what are your thoughts on the egoist ideology that, like, such as like Max Stirner's approach when it comes to an anarchist, well, an anarchist, a journey towards anarchism through utilizing the participation? So how, I mean, how do we get people, like, he, it's always focused on self, so how I guess my question is what are your thoughts on how do we get people to understand that in order to basically protect yourself and be yourself and understand that you have a necessity to life that to defend in co-op, but in cooperation with others, how do we, you know, like, how do we utilize that idea?
So I just want to point out that I believe that we only need 1.5% of the population to actually affect change. So it's anywhere statistically between 1.5% to 3% of the population. I don't think we're anywhere near that. But when you think about that, that should give you some courage to realize that it is actually not, it's not everybody. It's not even close to everybody. It's not even 5%. So don't worry, man. Just like figure this is like a really passionate hobby, right? The second thing is, I'm a certified Scrum Master. So I work in team building. And so team building is really, really important. You've got to have like stakeholders, let them know who your stakeholders are. The American people, the American future, the future of America, and all of those generations after that. So if we don't want our country to fall to like China, which I don't know, it could have already happened. Shoot. I mean, they're really good at covering stuff up in the media. But anyway, we have our stakeholders that we need to show, but then we also have to show them what the end product can possibly be by working together as a team. And we're not going to get along with everything. Like, we're not going to be able to cover every little thing, but we can agree to work on the things that we do agree on. And that's really important, right? So I'm a black flag anarchist. Okay. So that's not an ANCAP. I'm not black and yellow. I'm just black. For a while there, I was
Me
like
too.
black and gray. Okay. All right. All right. Cool.
Enough of that AnCap
Yeah, pretty much.
ANCAP
Okay, so like
shit.
the vast majority of modern anarchists, I'm gonna say it's literally like 70% at this point, are like a bunch of young ANCAPs who read Lark and Rose's One in Singular book, and that's it. And they now follow him and think that what they've done is they've like filled the void of government with another government. So the founder of voluntarism actually says that he is not an anarchist, that he is pro-government, but it's a voluntary government is what he calls it. That's done. ANCAP is then minarchy. It's not anarchy, and so that's it. But that's what I have to deal with on a regular basis, is people coming at me from ANCAPistan and aggressing me from ANCAPistan, and I have to deal with that, right? And I it, and it's fine, and it's totally fine. But the thing we have to do is, I allowed them to do this for like 10 years because I was like, we're gonna work together, like we're working together towards this end of government, right? But I don't actually know if that's true anymore after recent events. I kind of believe that they super duper love government and don't want it to go away at all. I used to like teeter on the edge of that. Like, why would you tell people to ignore the biggest problem they are facing in modern times? Why would you tell them to ignore an illegal, tyrannical, like oppressive government that's literally taking our money and giving it to their friends who are in charge of our food and media and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. I would teeter on the edge, but now it's clear. I mean, they're literally telling me we're going to have a voluntary government. Well, then you're not an anarchist because anarchists don't believe in voluntary government. They believe in like a voluntary transactional. It's individual. It's at the individual level. It's not at like a group or community level. And the other
Almost
thing that
like
really
mutualism.
irritates me, yeah, like mutualism. So it's like you can't force people under your hierarchy and claim to be an anarchist these days. And that is like the front facing to regular society. That's who they first are introduced to anarchy with. And I think that that's why we've kind of stagnated. You know, we're stagnating at like 100,000 activists, and we can't push past that. You know, and I believe it's because people are sitting here going, wait, I recognize this. And if I'm going to have psychopaths tell me that they're in charge of me, then I'm just going to stay with the Constitution. I'm just going to keep trying to vote my way out of this. Right. And so we've got to provide like a different avenue that is a lot more productive and that provides insight and helps people towards that end. Right. It's not just, yes, the government is illegitimate. Best of luck with that. It's government is illegitimate. I'm here with you. I agree with you that the government is illegitimate. Let's work together to fix this problem. So that's basically what my activism has been and what I hope to accomplish here within the next couple of years, actually.
Fantastic. Andrew, you got a rebuttal on the ANCAP stuff? Mr.
Well,
ANCAP?
I wasn't thinking about rebutting her. I was thinking
about the
thing she was talking about. You know, we worry about our negative rights, right? And the only way they can suppress our negative rights is through positive law. But the positive law is built on fiat currency. And it's just basically quicksand. Eventually, that fiat currency can be overexposed. And I've seen charts about how defense spending is, and the cost of the interest on defense spending is going to cross soon. Eventually, they're going to have to let some of these laws expire, and it's just going to be a domino effect, right? That
this is actually what I call working lean.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it. I never thought I'd put it that way, but you know, what do you think the roadmap on that is? The timeline and something like that happening. How far out do you project that just becoming a reality?
I mean, we are looking at 20 years, I think, realistically. And I can't even say that it will 100% happen. But elections are actually pretty time consuming. You have to consider, as a candidate, you're working 1 year out from the actual election. So you actually have to declare your candidacy pretty much as early as possible. You have to do that so that you can start accepting donations, which I did not get very many donations for my campaign. I think my campaign ran under $9,000. And I was really quite grassroots about it. So I had a bunch of people who were working with me to hand out pamphlets and to talk to people and to get like petitions signed by people so I could actually get on the ballot. And so my downfall is was the fact that people are able to say whatever they absolutely want to say without any regard to the truth whatsoever during a campaign. So the federal government, the states have taken away a person's right to correct for the truth during a political campaign. So I actually had the sheriff's department here interfere and tell people that I was involved with crime during my political campaign running for office, despite the fact that I've never like been detained or handcuffed, arrested, charged or convicted for anything ever. Right? Like, I have a really squeaky clean background. But they were able to say something like this, and all I could do was send a cease and desist in time for the election. Like, I still haven't sued them. I'm not sure I'm really into that. So I just don't see how I'm going to have a positive outcome for that. So I've just kind of been talking about it. But I literally have recordings of business people telling me that the sheriff's office, in uniform, in their police cars, coming to their place of business and telling them this, and actually interfering, which is illegal in a campaign. But how do you stop something like that? How do you stop somebody from blatantly lying about you? And then you have groupthink, where anybody who wants to follow them can do that, right? So Like, I can only imagine what could have happened if the newspaper allowed me to clarify that. But the newspaper said no, because they're allowed to choose what to print and what not to print. Okay.
Yeah, that's
So
yeah.
so everything is working together in concert pro-government. And so, this is not easy. This is not an easy
No.
task. It's not for people who do not have strong hearts. I'm just going to be really honest with you. But that is what we need. We need people with a strong conviction and strong integrity who can actually, and it hurts. Believe me, it hurts. It hurts to be told I'm a criminal when I've never been around. And my kids heard stuff like that, for example, right? And when you what I'm trying to help people understand are the elements of a campaign and how they're going to possibly affect them, right? So that they can be prepared for this and move on. Because there's all kinds of positions. It's not just like president of the United States. You can make a big difference in your community by working in like roads and bridges. Working as like the election official to make sure that elections are on the up and up and that they're not taking duffel bags outside of the building where there are no cameras to another place in the building where they can count them, which is what happens here. So,
No.
like actually educating your community is so important. And I know that they're winning that campaign of like misinformation where they're like, don't listen to anybody but us. Like anybody who does their own research could possibly be like a more dangerous terrorist than actual terrorists. And they tell people this. But you can point to facts. If you can point to actual facts, that really causes people to take a pause. I mean, I have spoken about this in front of thousands of people at this point. So, and I don't think I'll ever stop until we have enough people who are actively leading a life of voluntarism and working towards getting the government to function in a proper way, even if that is non-existent as I would prefer. That's what I would prefer.
Effectively, they have an aversion to transparency because if they're not transparent, then they have job security, and that's a breach of trust, conflict of interest.
Yes, absolutely. And this paradigm of illegitimate authority, it transpires all the way down to individual one-on-one interactions, which is like what classical anarchy discussed. It wasn't just like, oh, hey, the government's bad, you guys, we should do something. It was no, there are individual actors who are acting this way to have illegitimate authority over others, and it's not just the government. So like they started writing about this in 1881, right? Corporatism, not Mussolini's definition of like fascism, but corporatism, the group control over individuals politically, economically, and socially, that is what original OG anarchists were talking about. They were not just talking about government, and that is the kind of anarchist I am. I am a, as you stated at the beginning, a leave me the fuck alonist, as my friend Mike Ford coined me many, many years ago. I love being left alone. It's like my favorite thing. Since I'm not being left alone, I unfortunately have to get out there and be completely obnoxious. and it's just, it's what I have to do. And I'm okay with that. At this point in time, I've been doing it for a long time. I have a really thick skin. But I want to provide an outlet for anarchists who are interested in all the information. And so I think that that's probably what my legacy is going to be to the anarchist community is an opening up of information for people for free.
That sounds awesome. Excellent. So, speaking of corporatism, I know there's always a roundabout on capitalism, and you got the left versus the right. Yeah, on the economic stand, MMT versus free market capitalism, laissez-faire. But in reality of it, capitalism. What is your take on capitalism being just an ism? And is it really just, is capitalism by itself really just by definition, it's really honestly just those with capital. So what is your take on capitalism? Is it free market capitalism, or is it something else and markets are left alone in another sector in the economy?
Yeah, so I would have to say that I'm definitely 100% an individual transactional voluntarist. So I don't believe in capitalism as a system. I think that that's silly, especially because it's literally just private owners for profit. So it perpetuates the inequality that people have. And now I'm not saying I'm not at all a communist. I 100% believe in the free market and individual transactions on an individual level. 100% support that. Have actually been an agorist business owner for 8 years. I owned an online bakery and confectionery, Mountain Maiden Trading, and it was Anar Candies back OG. Right. So I did that for like 8 years, supported my family that way. Very grateful to the community for supporting me through that. And it's just it is the best and most forward and honest way to conduct yourselves in the market, is to just make sure that you are fully honest with one another. But when you start to have systems, like for example, I've been told that communities can revoke my insurance coverage for being in their communities, as ANCAPs have told me this before, that once a community decides to ostracize me, that they can revoke my insurance to be in that city or to travel to another city. And I laugh at this because that's right. My kid's dad is a 17-year professional lines commercial insurance broker, and he might have a really good idea on how this works. And it doesn't work like that, you guys. So, like, insurance contracts are between the insurance company and the client. They would literally laugh at a mob calling them up and saying, "Hey, you got to revoke that insurance policy. It's not a thing." Some of the things that the ANCAP community has created in regards to their future anarchist economy, it's not actually viable, right? And some of the things people think that once we end government, that the bad things and the bad actors are just are going to disappear, and suddenly we'll have a free market. But that's just not the truth. And we've been dealing with interference in the market, over like taking over people's social and economic positions in society for thousands of years, couple thousand years. That's what corporatism is. And so capitalism, like any economic system, is actually just a made-up form of control. And it's a system that the people who are in control want you to believe in. But the market itself, you would be able to study the market of individual voluntary transactions. And eventually, maybe we would come up with a word for that. But it's not free market when you have like giant insurance corporations, giant food corporations, et cetera, et cetera. It should also be noted, corporations are a government entity. So they were created by the government, right? A corporation is a legal definition. So, like, you need all of this structure in order for capitalism to exist. So under anarchy, it wouldn't exist like people think it would, or how it currently does. The
Well,
transition would be a lot different.
and it makes it fascinates me that we get on that track of what is capitalism good or bad, or what is capitalism? Because like capitalism never really, it wasn't a term at all until post Marx, actually. Like he referred to it in Das Kapital, and then I think after that, I think besides Das Kapital, it came about, I forget the author's name, but it was like an 1850s like fiction book, that it got brought up, and then all of a sudden it got meshed into the economic sector. So like there's never been a really a word for what capital is. And I mean, it's just another ism, as you said, like just another system in place. So I mean, and I
It's a
like
way to
the
buy money. Okay, so like it's a way to buy money. That's what capital is. It's a way to get into debt purchasing money. So purchasing loans or purchasing stocks or et cetera, et cetera. You're always working towards purchasing money, which eventually leads to it not being worth anything.
Which is all, it's all a fiat system anyways, and then it's all perpetuated in a scheme of debt monetization in some source, some capacity, even if it's not dollars or stocks or it, then it's stocks or it's bonds or it's bond. If it's not bonds, it's property. And it's like, what is property anyways? Well, property is what you can homestead, what you can basically put your effort in. And I mean, I'm for you like purchasing it, but you don't officially own it unless you put forth the effort. But I mean, if you, when you, when we put in place, like let's look at property and not putting the effort in, not homesteading it. I mean, what do we got in the system of capitalism in today's world? We have bank, effectively bank in incentives, where we have mortgages, and that's how most people are buying their homes. And you have an interest rate that you have to pay off before you can get to the initial loan, and it's just a it's an entrapment to where you're buying for debt in hopes that you can pay off that debt, and then you have, yeah, then you're a homeowner officially. So
So, and the banks and the government are working together, right? Because if you don't pay your taxes, then the government gets your house, And so, yeah, it's literally a crazy cycle of just exploitation is really what it is. And I just think that America, like humans, can find a better way, right? I don't think that this should be the only way. I think that everybody can live very nicely off of the over $100 trillion that the government has in real property. So if we void out the government and we disseminate that very, it's very real property. We're talking $100 trillion in like seeds, in land, in cars, stores. Like it's a real thing that people won't have to worry about. Just surviving, and we can actually come together and be like, oh, we don't even need to like compete with each other to make money and live because we can all live pretty nicely. And then who knows, maybe they'll go to Mars and find like a human body there where it was like, we destroyed Mars, don't come here. I don't know, but the possibilities are endless. Of course, I'm like a people call me like a utopian anarchist. Because I think so positively about this outcome, but it's like I just understand the psychological value of a person being able to thrive instead of just surviving, and the potential that that leads to.
What is your take on that? Like, why is it that whenever anarchy in any capacity, ANCAP, Black Flag, agorism, whatever, ANCOM, who cares? What it is, it always comes back to, oh, you're just a utopian. That's not reality. Why is it that people go to that conceptuality and want to, is it just a way to just downgrade that philosophy, or because their fear and not knowing what it is, or why do people go to that extreme?
I believe that it is because our position requires people to take self-responsibility and to constantly assess and reassess how they are behaving. And people don't like doing that. So, I mean, I can't deny it. There are times where I don't like doing it, but I try and remain humble and understand. Like, I constantly come from a perspective of, remember, Rachel, you don't actually have inherent authority over another person. So you must speak to them and talk to them like an equal. and try to find common ground. And I don't think people are very interested in that at this point. I think a lot of people really like the whole fighting in the community. It's entertaining, right? And it leaves us in like a stagnation. It's kind of like going mudding and getting your tires stuck in the mud. Like you're just spinning your wheels. It's slick. Nothing's gonna happen. So then people see this and then they say to themselves, that you can't even do it. You can't even do it, and you're expecting me to do it. This, that's insane. I think that we have to actually be the example of what we want to see in the community and actually inspire people. And that will change people's minds about it being a utopia, which I don't think it'll be. I'm a consequentialist, right? I don't actually believe in the NAP. Yeah, I think that the non-aggression principle is illusory and void. Because like I've had ANCAPs just be like, hey, I'm going to come steal your property when you walk off of it. And I'm like, wait, hold, what? I'm going to defame you because that is a positive right and I'm allowed to do that. No, I'm sorry. Mm-hmm. You can't claim to be a non-aggressor and then say that there are things that you could do to aggress people. That's not how it works in any way, shape, or form. And so
behavior.
The NAP is illusory. It's void. Yeah, exactly. Well, that's right. Somebody else's bad behavior is a reflection on them, but also on the community at large. I mean, we have to consider that. I do sometimes throw tantrums, but I get back to my lifestyle of trying to be productive because that is what I want to show people. Like I have children, right? I have a 7-year-old and a 5-year-old, and I can't be throwing tantrums or being ridiculous on the internet and expect my children to grow up and be the responsible adults that I want them to be. So, it's just a matter of reinforcing this. It's constant reinforcement. It is very much like teaching a toddler. You want to bang your head up against the wall a lot because teaching a toddler is just constant repetition. Constant repetition, like sternly constant repetition singing and constant repetition asking questions and all of these different ways that you're reinforcing the same lesson over and over and over again. But that is how you build productive human beings and productive societies, even though I'm not a big fan of society. So I'm a true leave me the fuck aloneist. Like I'm literally like, cool, you guys enjoy like your Jersey Shore or whatever it's called nowadays. I'm kind of old. And you just do your thing, but I'm gonna be over here and I'm like crocheting and reading books and gardening and taking care of bees because that's my zen, right? There's everybody is allowed in my mind, in my utopia, everybody's allowed to be the person that they want to be to reach their fullest potential, but they're not allowed to aggress people willy-nilly in any way, shape, or form. Like bullying, why even bother with that? What is the point of all of this? And deterrence or how you stop that. So I'm a big fan of actually punching people in the face to prevent them from continuing on with their nonsense. And absolutely.
Yeah. Andrew here is too. I finally got him to turn around on the NAP. We actually got into a conversation about it once. We're like, that NAP really, I mean, do you really believe in that, Andrew? And he's like, yeah, kind of. I mean, we go back and forth on the coveted society, like hopping ideas and the NAP, and then like, but it just doesn't make any sense, though. I mean, if someone has to aggress before you can aggress, then that means they can just aggress, take your stuff, and you're shit out of luck.
You get your ducks in a row, and if you can, it depends how much stress you can handle before your ducks get out of the row.
Exactly.
Yeah, absolutely. Me, I like zero stress. I'm a big fan of the zero stress. So I'm triggered like really easily. I have learned, because I've dealt with psychopaths a lot, actually. I've learned that when you threaten to ruin a psychopath's life, they will either go like full force or they'll flee. They will flee because they do not want their precious life ruined. Okay. Mm-hmm. And so that's generally what happens when I confront psychopaths. They block me and then try and do things to me without me having any say or ability to defend myself. And they kind of just like make up purple monkey dishwasher things, and people are allowed to believe them because I don't have any control over this, right? So it's actually, and this is what I've realized, it's anarchists doing this who actually do love the state's monopoly on violence, because they can't do this in anarchy. Like they would have anarchist retribution out the ass. Like I'm pretty sure I wouldn't have even had to deal with these people. They would have already done long been expired, as I said on another interview. Because people are not going to tolerate any
No.
kind of aggression, you know, whether it is just defamation, it's words, and words hurt you. Yes, words actually do hurt. You know, as much as I don't like the government, they have a sound idea of defamation actually causes reputational ruin. It causes financial ruin, family ruin. So yes, it does cause actual damages. It is an aggression. So for me, as a consequentialist, I get to decide what is an aggression and what is not. And I get to decide what justice is for somebody who aggresses me. And if you just don't aggress people, then chances are you won't have to deal with the consequences of that aggression. And so you can't be like, well, that's not fair, because it wouldn't exist if you didn't aggress somebody in the first place. So that's where my position is. And that comes from years and years of being bullied and ostracized. Like you know, since I was a little kid, right? I'm a nerd. So I've been mocked and ridiculed and teased and bullied for being a nerd, and that's fine. I'm never going to stop. And so that's just something I've always had to deal with, and that is my boundary. I don't do well with like the community trying to aggress me. I don't think that a community has like more power because it's a bunch of people coming together over an individual. I believe that they're equal. So like you can have a whole community over here and they're still equal to that one person. And so that is the difference between me and most other anarchists today. You know, us Black Flags, we're a small group. We live by a code. You know, we don't live by a hierarchy of some weird dude and his wife deciding that they're going to be in charge of everything. That's insane to me. You know, and so we have to confront that as a community, whether we like it or not. Otherwise, yes, all of this will be for naught. It'll be for nothing. And we all might as well just stop doing what we're doing, and figure out life off of the internet. Because I've come together with thousands of people, and if we are not going to move forward, and we're not going to have courage, and we're not going to work on ourselves so that we can be the example for people outside of our community, it's going to fizzle away and die. That is exactly what happened like 100 years ago. You know, it was just like anarchists, those silly anarchists, they keep blowing things up, right? They keep trying to kill people. This is nonsense. You know, but they were like, they were legitimate. They were like, hey, man, like these people just bought our presidency. We need to stop this, right? So their positions were legitimate. It's just they became so angry because they didn't have any real outlet. So this is me trying to continue in their life's work and provide an outlet for people here in 21st century America where we
Make
can
a better
actually
impression.
not have to blow things. Yeah, exactly. And just work as our community to provide the best example of what human beings can be like when there isn't any government. We don't need government. We need to work together. That is the biggest point that people should come out of this. People are mad at
Some
me
would,
in the anarchist community.
oh,
Oh,
I
no, go
said
ahead.
some would say, to work together, that would be a government, though.
Confluence, the merging of
Yes.
rivers.
Well, no. Yes, because a government is authority, right? So our government is like rule of law. We don't have to have a rule of law.
No.
You know, it's just like you and me, we decide I have a service that you would really, really like. You have some eggs, I have some honey, right? And we're just going to trade that. That's it. right? And then people see that. People see that example, you know? It's like right now, I work with a contractor who made a deal with me like a year ago. He was like, okay, I will not fix your house for you. I'm old and I want to retire, but I do have a lot of information for you. So I will charge you $40 an hour, you know, to teach you these things. And I will watch over you as my apprentice, right? And in exchange, you will get your house. So that's the type of agorism and working togetherness that I'm talking about. I'm not talking about, hey, you know what, Zach and Andrew and I got together and we decided that we are the new government and we have implemented this court over here. And also, by the way, it's a closed court. You don't get a trial and you don't get your right to self-defense. We've already decided that you are not allowed to do what you want in society. You said you wanted to own a business. I'm sorry, you are now going to be in agriculture. So head on over there and pick some alfalfa. Okay,
but
it's not like that. I'm not here to place any type of hierarchy. I would like people to actually work in like a circle instead of a triangle. So we're all on an equal plane. And we're like holding hands, kumbayaing in my utopian anarchy, right?
Right.
Instead of the hierarchy.
But wait, my grandpa could do that. Why can't I do that now?
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. That's where I'm at. So I've worked really, really hard to look into like local law and figure out how local law is illegal. And then I've explained that to the locals, which has actually changed. It has hugely changed my community. So like 3 years ago, I was like, hey, you guys, the land use regulations at the county level, we're like, you're not allowed to hire a non-licensed contractor, right? Or you have to get that permit for that septic, and that septic is only allowed to be this $80,000 septic system that we've approved, right? I was like, that's all illegal. So like, we need to change that. I didn't get elected to office, but the planning director was like, oh crap, she's right. She's right. Yeah. Like all of these are illegal. And if I enforce them, I'm eventually going to cause a lawsuit to the county. So like even this week, there was an article on the Pagosa Daily Post, which is where I write some of my articles. And my editor wrote about how the planning director is trying to change the enforcement process of those land use regulations completely so that it's more inclusive of people in the community that they've been targeting for like the last, since 1992. Okay. So like 40 years we're talking about, 30 years. Okay. So 30 years
that
they've been targeting. And it's because of this, just speaking out as an activist. So there was a point like in the summer of 2022 where they were, the same planning director was trying to get an enforcement against the growth of marijuana on your own property. I live in Colorado, so that's like 100% legal to do. And she was literally trying to make it illegal if somebody smelled it off of your property, which is not... Okay,
yeah.
And that the police could come in and completely raid you and blah, blah, blah for growing illegal plants. And like, I tried for weeks to talk to them privately, like in their offices. It didn't matter. They refused to even like acknowledge my presence. They kept saying, well, our county attorney said that it's legal. So too bad, I don't want to hear it. I eventually had to make a 3-minute legal argument as a public comment. And literally my argument was like, I don't know why you guys are referencing Section A of the law when Section B actually makes what you're doing illegal. So you keep referencing A that you're allowed to do this, but Section B actually says that it is a constitutional right for medical marijuana patients to grow their plants, and that it is just between their doctor and them how many plants they can grow. It has nothing to do with the county. And it actually explicitly says under Section B that the county isn't even allowed to know when people have their medical marijuana card, because then they would be enforcing illegal laws against them. So I actually got them to stop that regulation that new regulation because I pointed out that they were breaking the law. And so, you know, it's this kind of education and these kind of incremental changes. It's not going to happen overnight by any stretch of the imagination.
No.
But imagine if 1.5% of us were consistently working towards this. At some point in time, the media is definitely going to have to acknowledge that, especially if people get into office, like in Argentina, right? Milei, and he's an ANCAP. And he's now president of Argentina. That's what we need to be doing. I know it sucks to say we need to work within the system to fix the system, but that's not quite what I'm saying. I'm literally saying use the system to destroy the system. Yeah, exactly. It's like, what am I thinking of? Instead of exploding, it's imploding. You want to implode the system from the inside. You're not looking to change it into bright and shiny new constitutional republic. You're looking to eliminate it. And the way to do that is within the system itself. So that's kind of where my thought process has been the last several years.
Question on Malek. What do you think of Malek? Is he the real deal, or could he be controlled opposition for, say, a state, the state trying to use him to clean house of like the mess they made in order to kind of do a great reset, I guess you could say. Oh man, what is?
Is he an American Manchurian candidate?
Oh man, he could be.
That's kind of what crossed my mind, you know, as I was watching him campaign. I loved his campaign, don't get me wrong. He's done good things. You know, he's done good things. But when I hear he wants to do it by implementing the American dollar as their currency system, that's kind of where I'm like, ooh, you're making a mistake, dude. Because the American dollar is, it's on its way out. I wrote about that back in 2008 with the Amero. They were talking about a new currency all the way back then, before they realized that it could possibly be digital. And so the last stage of a failing republic is when the public realizes that they can actually just raid the coffers. So whoever they elect in offers, you know, all of these promises of what government's going to pay for, and then government rapidly goes into debt, and then like the whole system fails. We're there. We're totally there. That's been happening for quite some time now. And they have really ramped it up during the pandemic. Like they passed a $1.7 trillion like emergency expenditure back in like 2021, right? That's actually they made that part of the new budget. It's not like its own separate expenditure. So we went from like a $4 trillion budget to now like a $6.5 trillion government. So they tacked that expend the COVID bailout. They tacked that onto the regular budget. So every year now, they have an additional $1.7 trillion to spend on whatever they want. And they do this through continuing resolutions. So Nancy Pelosi, for example, as House Speaker, she passed one budget in her entire time of being House Speaker from 2011 until like whatever, last year or whatever. And she doesn't pass budgets. They pass what's called a continuing resolution. So it's like a blank check, right? So the government has a 6.2 or 6.7, whatever the hell it is, budget, right? And they can't agree on the line item spending. So they say, to keep government from shutting down, we will pass this continuing resolution, which is just a blank check to the departments for what they were spending at the last budget passed, right? So if you're like the National Park Service, and in the last budget passed, you were like, hey, I need $10,000 for this conference table, and you get approved for that budget, right? Every year that they pass a continuing resolution, you get that $10,000 for that conference table. It's a blank check. And then the actual departments have difficulty spending those funds because they have to line itemize it. And they don't have approval from Congress. So then it costs even more money for them to actually function. And so this is how they're doing it. And they love it. It's just pure money laundering. And they continuously do this while all of our regular household item spending is astronomical. And they keep saying that like half of us are the enemy for noticing it. It's like crazy. It's literally bonkers. That's why I'm like, this is like a dystopian satirical America. This is not at all what it was supposed to be like. And we, the American people, are the signatories of the Constitution. So we've got to fix that. So we have every opportunity to fix.
I didn't sign it. No. That's another thing. Are we though?
That's the other thing that people bring up, right?
Yeah.
Perpetual contracts. Perpetual contracts. Okay. Where a contract goes on into perpetuity for forever and ever, amen. In contract law, they're illegal and void. So how the Constitution became like the only contract that isn't illegal based on perpetuity, but all of
this
is actually
contract.
Yeah, no, it's not a
it's
social
a
contract.
Social contract.
It is a finite legal contract that creates a third party entity called the federal government. So that, you know, you have to consider you've got all of these people doing their propaganda and their bullshit stories about how it's a social contract and how it's a living document. It's not a living document. A fixed document. It is only considered a living document because it has an amendment process. Okay, so a totally fixed document does not have an amendment process. That is the only reason why it is a living document, but they don't want you to know this, right? So all of these problems come from that case ruling, Marbury v. Madison, 1803, where the courts say, we need the power of judicial review and we're going to give it to ourselves because there are holes and gaps in the Constitution and we need to be able to review that. Underneath that is the more insidious and more disgusting judicial activism, which is the belief that you can redefine legal words from the bench and that you can redefine the Constitution from the bench so that you can include modern times with the Constitution. Okay.
Redefine
so
context.
Like that, it's crazy. Yeah. So like health. For example, the definition of health originally was like, you know, a Fourth Amendment, an absolute Fourth Amendment right to be secure in your person, papers, and effects for the enjoyment of health. And then the Supreme Court changed that in Jacobson v. Massachusetts in 1905. And they said health is not an absolute right, a right that falls outside of government control. It is a right that can be regulated by the state's police powers. So they redefined what health was, and they're still redefining what health is, particularly public health, which is very scary. I wrote about that at the Pagosa Daily Post back in 2022. And so this is what they've been doing from the bench, you know, for, well, I don't know, 223 years. Okay. And we all know, like, you know, just basic government 101, civics 101, whatever. The Constitution's formal amendment process does not include the government giving itself powers in court cases. It doesn't include the president giving himself additional powers through executive orders. It doesn't include Congress giving itself additional powers through law. Like, we all know this. It's very basic. And so we have to confront this, and we're the ones with the power to confront it. Fine. We didn't sign shit, right? Okay. Well, maybe we did now. Okay. I'm totally fine with this perpetual contract being over me. And now I'm going to fuck with you with it. I'm now going to make it completely illegal for you to practice judicial review. It's now a high crime, a misdemeanor. It is considered treasonous and you will be hanged. Welcome to the 28th Amendment, right? Welcome to the 29th Amendment that says that the government cannot regulate health. It can't regulate free speech. It can't regulate gun control. These are all things that we have the ability to just come together and fix. Or maybe the 28th Amendment should be the negation clause where we actually void out the Constitution. the Constitution is no longer enforceable. It is now void, and all of the debts that have been accumulated by the federal government are now also null and void. And all of the property of the federal government will be disseminated to the people, respectively. Done. And now we are no longer a constitutional government, federally speaking. The states will still have constitutions. They will not belong to the federal government, though. So back in the day when states became states, they had to follow laws by the federal government to be allowed into the federal states, like the state federation, okay? So like one of the requirements, was that they weren't allowed to secede. Okay, that would all be void now. So now your constitutions at the state level can be completely amended or abolished in the same exact process. That would eliminate all county and city authority, because that all derives from the legislative duties of your, like, your General Assembly at the state level. So they delegate those powers to a county and towns. Okay, so like this is how we actually eliminate it in real time. And then once we're there, I don't know, I would hope that tribalism would not happen. Okay, but I do see it happening today in anarchy. There's a lot of tribalism, just, you know, like warfare. But it would be really awesome if people just left each other alone and we were able to build our own communities based off of what we voluntarily believe could help one another, instead of harming one another. That would be the idea. But there is, like, there's a path, there's a solution, there's a way that we can actually get there. It just, it does require a bit of activism. But you're never going to solve a problem in your life if you ignore it. So we have to build up this courage. And I know that it doesn't sound fun, especially because most of the community has been told to just ignore this for the better part of a decade. But ignoring it has gotten us into an even worse position than we have been in. And we are on the verge of the republic failing, which I'm fine with, but that usually leads to an immense amount of tyranny.
There's always a cost to ignorance. I mean, look at the Soviet Union versus the United States and the level of technological improvement over one another. So,
look at the way the Soviet Union dissolved, and look at how the United States is going to probably dissolve. I mean, it's totally different. The Soviet Union was peacefully able to succeed, honestly, with a little bit of agorism on the local side, and then it kind of trickled up, sort of like Reagan's trickle down that failed. It trickled up, and then the Soviet Union collapsed. So, literally on itself, and then you go.
It's all based on speed, or, you know, pace, however you want to define it.
Yeah. Well, so. I'm under the belief that the American government went under a silent military coup in 2020, 2021 anyway.
Yeah, well, so we do this every 100 years. They reframe their position.
Yeah, so that's what it looks like to me. You know, I have my degree in political science and religious studies, 2 degrees, with an emphasis in pre-law. I was like top of my law classes and blah-blah-blahs from when I was younger. And so I have a pretty good idea about human history, and I just see the patterns of what's going on here. It's like, it's very, very clear. I've been talking about it like it is truly a game of risk, and the world is the board. So whoever is running this, they're just playing a game of risk, and they're literally building their fantastical wealth off of the treasuries of countries that have been military installed governments for years and years. And after they destroy the American dollar, they will just move. They're going to move on to the next military installed to get as much money as they can. And so we've
Give
got
me.
to think a little bit about what they're doing a little bit larger than just how it affects me personally. There's definitely a pattern here that human beings can unlock. They can look back and say, oh yeah, no, this is following such and such from, 1556 or whatever. You can go all the way back. But yeah, that's what we need people to realize on a mass scale. I'm hoping that we get there. I'm really, that's where my optimism comes in. But I need other people to help me with that.
Well, give me a nation's money supply, and I care not who makes the law. Nathan Rothschild, 1815. So, I mean, you got a point. Yeah, someone's controlling the reins of the puppets. So
it's world building.
It is world building. So, and speaking of world building, this has been a exciting and excellent conversation. I hate to cut it short, but we've run way over time, Andrew, and that's awesome, actually. So only the second time that we've actually done this. So we're in almost very close to 2 hours, so give or take. So
awesome.
But yeah, so it was excellent to have you on, Rachel, and wouldn't mind having you back on as well. So
thanks
I mean,
so much for having me on. Absolutely.
Oh, not a problem. Anything would you like to plug out? I know you're on Facebook.
Yeah.
Anywhere else?
I'm really not. I have a defunct YouTube channel called Literacy to Liberty Official. It really isn't anything, so don't get too excited. I am on Facebook if anybody's interested in following me. Since I do keep my page kind of private, let me know that you saw me on the Legacy Right, and I will keep you on my page. You can expect to see my second book coming out here in early summer. It is called The Voluntarist Trusty Guide to 21st Century Activism, and it will be breaking down everything that we discussed today. So you can expect to see that, and it will be for free because the freedom movement and freedom is what my goal is. So thank you guys.
Excellent. And then what was your first book that you wrote that came out in 2021?
Yeah. My first book is called How Medical Tyranny Murdered the United States Constitution. And I had somebody actually donate a large portion of money so that I would provide this to the public for free. Obviously, that donation has long run out, but I do like to keep my word. So the PDF is available on my Facebook. It is public. You just need to search Murdered Constitution, and it will come up either as a PDF or you can hear it for free as an audiobook on Literacy to Liberty Official on YouTube.
Nice, very nice. So, well, it was nice having you on, and very informative. So, lots of information has gone through. So, thank you once again, Rachel. Andrew, you have anything? Any concerns? Any rebuttals? Anything else to ask or to say?
I just wanted to say sorry for interrupting you there just a minute ago, but this has been a very great episode. I really appreciate you joining us.
It's a true pleasure. I can't wait for people to see it. Thank you for having me on.
Thank you.
Well, thank you. So, but with that, this has been, that's Lysander Spooner. The Legacy Right, as I point to Lysander Spooner. I am the legacy of Jennifer and Kaiser. Zachary Kaiser, this has been a hell of a show and a hell of a trip down through the Delta Quadrant. That's Andrew Joseph. She's Rachel Sunshine. And have a very nice and interesting rest of your week or weekend or whenever you listen to this, everybody. Enjoy. Peace.
Thanks for watching. See you later.
Thanks.